Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for June the 11th, 2018. This is David Corey along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. We have two major segments in our show tonight. First, since June is PTSD Awareness Month, we have a series of interviews made by the VA about the experiences of veterans and family members in dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder and related problems. Then in our second segment tonight, we have VA news from Washington from this past week. But first, let's go over to Richard Hurley. Hello, Richard.
Hey there, David, and good evening, everyone. Hope everybody's having a pleasant evening. We'd like to remind our listeners that we are also a call-in show, so you can let us know what is on your mind as far as the veteran issues are concerned. Your veteran issues. Our toll-free call-in number covering the entire United States is 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. And during the show, we will remind you of that number again. As David mentioned, June is PTSD Awareness Month. Post-traumatic stress is a common but often misunderstood condition that many veterans suffer from, particularly if they have been in combat. In tonight's show, thanks to the VA's online program called Make the Connection, available on YouTube and other social media platforms, we will hear from some veterans and their families about their experiences dealing with the effects of military service, as well as how they coped with making the transition from military to civilian life. In the first tape, we hear from Tom. Tom served in the Army Air Corps between 1945 and 1948, and then in the infantry in Korea. He returned home and had trouble functioning as he had before. After his wife died, Tom turned to alcohol and drugs to try and cope. When he went to the VA for help with past injuries, his doctor recognized symptoms of PTSD. Treatment and support from other veterans have helped him turn his life around. Doug, at this time, if you please roll tape one, entitled Seeking Treatment for Alcohol Problems and PTSD.
Tom and I served in the Army Air Corps in 1945 and until 1948. I was going to come out and make a career, and I joined the inactive reserves to go back in to keep my rank and time and my GI Bill. I found a good job, good money, good pay, and then they called me up in August of 1950. And I had a report the 1st of September, and I went to Korea, and I was there until 1951, and it was a living hell, and it was tough in that infantry, and the worst thing about it, buddies and friends are close, you lose. It makes you sick at your stomach. It's tough, but this is one of the things that when I came back, it threw me. After I came home, I had problems. I had nobody, I didn't know how to work them out, you know. I couldn't walk very good, and I had some problems to hold my job down, you know. But I had a problem with my remembering things and that, and I thought, you know, weak. You know, I was weak, you know. You know, man doesn't leave things like that bother him. And the trouble is, if you keep too many things and you don't inside it, you can hurt yourself. I lost my wife through death. And being a widower and 34 and a half years married, it knocked me. And I didn't know what to do. You know, I drank too much. I took the pills and I drank, took the pills and I dropped the pills. And then I had to go into a detox, which I did. And I went in and I changed. I don't go and get souse. I went to the VA, you know, because my, you know, I was having more problems with my injuries. And I went up there, and I talked to them up there, and the doctor said, I'm nervous. I was nervous, you know, I jumped, somebody, noise behind me, somebody up and tapped me, I'd jump. And then they told me I had post-traumatic stress. And I, what's that, you know? And they told me what it was. And after associating with the guys, my buddies up there, who had the same problem, I understood my problem. I went to a psychiatrist and told me what to do, you know, talked with me. And the best thing for me, even today, when I go up and I spend the time with my buddies up there, and we're all in the same boat, we serve together. I see them, it's like a shot of adrenaline. We can talk, we can say things our whole life that we kept inside, and we can tell each other, and we understand each other, you know. And everything's between us, it stays in that room. Don't wait until you're 70, 80 years old and find out what you have to do. Look, you know, look how much you waste. As for my fellow veterans that have that problem, it's out there. It's there. Use it to help yourself. The country will help you.
Well, that's a great insight from Tom. Tom
hit on a couple of issues that are so important. One of them is that, you know, I talked to the younger vets today, and even the Vietnam vets, and there seems to be this misconception that the World War II and the Korean War vets didn't struggle with PTSD like the veterans today do. And it was definitely treated differently back then. You and I have had cases involving veterans who were dealing with PTSD and how the VA dealt with it. But Tom really hits on some great points about how he struggled and how he, his coping mechanisms being alcohol. So that's one point. And then the other thing that he touched on was not waiting to get the help. And I know in our law practice, David, we see that quite a bit. Veterans who we now represent, some of them, you know, have come to us for other claims. And in the course of our representation of them, we start talking to them about PTSD. And a lot of them, you know, right away, they kind of get their back up and say, oh, no, that's not me. I don't have that. But then as you start dealing with them and talking with them and listening to them and listening to some of their symptoms, and then, you know, you and I will send them off to one of our psychologists that we have, that we use. And clearly they are suffering. So it's great to see Tom kind of in three and a half minutes, he kind of hit on all those points. What your thoughts?
No, you're right. And although the term post-traumatic stress is a term that really became more commonly used after the Vietnam War, certainly in other wars, the condition was recognized but called by different things like shell shock or battle fatigue or some other euphemism that really didn't do justice to the to the impact on a person. And and I think you know, going back to World War II and the decades, particularly the first decade after World War II, medicine was much different. Psychiatric care was much different than it is today. My perception is that probably a lot of those World War II vets, they'd come home and they would self-medicate with alcohol. A lot of them did, and I think the fact that there were, you know, that World War II was viewed as kind of a different war, and then coming home, and a lot of those veterans then going to school and jumping into careers, and that it was probably a different experience than, or I'm sure it was, from talking to veterans that I've represented and known, a much different experience from the typical Vietnam veteran who would go over to Vietnam and serve 12 or 13 months and then leave Vietnam, and often would then leave the service within weeks after leaving Vietnam and find themselves back in their hometown, far removed from the military or any support system. And the Vietnam veterans were not treated as the you know, the greatest generation of warriors that that saved the world, as the World War II generation. And so there wasn't that same sort of support for them. But yeah, I agree with your observations, Rick. I think it's important, and I think Tom's insight was great to hear. We next are going to hear from a Marine Corps veteran named Marcus, who lost his leg in an IED blast. He used alcohol to try to cope. He fell into depression, had problems in his marriage. He found that therapy helped him quit drinking and find meaning and purpose in life. And through marriage counseling, Marcus and his wife have been able to rebuild their marriage. So, Doug, if you'll please roll tape 2, which is a combat veteran overcomes many challenges after an IED blast.
My name is Marcus. I'm in the Marine Corps, or was in the Marine Corps, and I served both in Iraq and Afghanistan. I joined the Marine Corps to do essentially one thing, and that was to go fight. I joined at the age of 17, just out of high school. I went home and I told my mom that I wanted to join the Marine Corps, that I was going to become a Marine. And so within the Native American cultures, I believe that, or I actually see that not a lot of them give the initial support of being in the military. And a lot of that might come from, you know, the pass down of historic events that Native Americans and the U.S. government have had in the past. So to be a part of the Marine Corps in this day and age was definitely a big step for my family. I've done 3 deployments to Iraq, and so that was 2006, 2007, 2008. I did reenlistment then, and I went to a Marine unit in Camp Pendleton and did a deployment to Korea and Afghanistan. On October 9th in 2010, I stepped on a 25-pound pressure-plated IED, and that resulted in the loss of my left leg above the knee. My life in every aspect had to be adapted. Now I was no longer, you know, physically healthy. I was an amputee. You know, there was a level of depression from when I initially got injured, and my thought process with depression was that it was because people just weren't strong enough to handle, you know, trauma. And then I went through a depression and I could not help what my body was doing. I went to the mental health care professionals and I said, hey, this is what my daily lifestyle is looking like right now. And I need you to sort of help me figure out what I need to do to get out of this. For me, myself, it was difficult because I had never gone through therapy. I didn't know exactly what it was we were supposed to talk about. There was definitely a lot of denial about the level of stress that I was going through in dealing with a lot of the things that I had endured while being a Marine. I mean, it was almost like a full-time second job trying to go back and not necessarily undo what happened to myself, but to try to just put it in a different perspective that, you know, I wasn't going to be able to change anything, but I could live with it and have that progression in life. It's been about 7 years since I lost my leg in Afghanistan. And that transitional time, even 7 years sounds like an ample amount of time, but 7 years to me has been a series of moments in my transition. So maintaining my marriage is definitely moments in my transition. Being Native American, there was sort of like this this taboo mindset that Native Americans couldn't handle alcohol. There was a lot of people who, you know, probably joke with me about it, like, oh, you know, Chishuli's Native American, he can't handle drinking. But I think there were a lot of things that I wasn't being taught how to deal with internally about my experiences in the Marine Corps and a lot of the deployments that I had done. Drinking sort of was just like an outlet for me that became too much of an outlet. I met my wife in the first year as a Marine. And when it came to drinking, you know, she was like, hey, if we live together, if we start a family, you know, there's a side of this that, you know, needs to stop or, you know, slow down in a bit so you could pay attention to you know, fulfilling the needs of being a dad, the needs of being, you know, a husband. So there was a little bit of struggle there. But, you know, I went to the resources that were there and available and said, you know, that I had an issue. Those programs were put in place to try to catch people before they got to the point where they can't take back, you know, they couldn't take back some of the mistakes that they would make. As my lifestyle changed and I became more involved in my marriage, as I became more involved at being a dad, she wanted me to understand how to improve that as well. Mm-hmm. Marriage counseling was definitely a good thing. I don't push that on people like it's something they need to do, but it's a good resource. It's a good outlet. The change I think is a steady progress for myself. I've gone back a number of times to just try to, you know, get tune-ups or get some realignments. All the stuff that I've was given before through mental health, through substance abuse programs, through marital counseling, it had meaning. It had purpose in my life. You actually go through, you know, some type of reconstruction that help you, you know, just take your experiences, your workplace, your marriage, your relationship with your kids and the rest of your family and your friends. All of those experiences help you just become better at those things.
Your thoughts, Richard?
Well, yeah, my first thought, and I've shared this with you on the show before about my own issues. You know, this August, I've been a friend of Bill and Bob's in the AA program for 11 years. And one of the things that the tape comments on that I think is so important is how he goes back and continues his treatment in the sense of, you know, going back and talking, you know, keeping his foundation right in line so he can deal with his family, his friends, his children, as he says. And that's so important. And you see that in recovery. And I see that for myself. I go back, you know, you go to meetings, and it kind of get you back in that step that you need to be in. So I can kind of relate to that. And I'm glad that he said that because, you know, one of the things that I think when I'm talking to civilians about veterans suffering with PTSD is if they can get the help that they need, like anybody in recovery, what you're doing is giving them the coping mechanisms so that they can live life to the fullest. And that's what I think that young man really addresses, is he now has the tools, and he goes back and reinforces all those tools periodically so that he can live as normal and functioning of a life that he's entitled to. That's kind of what I saw there. How about you, David?
No, that's great. That's I agree with you. So I understand we have a Vietnam vet on next. Can you tell us about that, Richard?
Yes, we hear from Samaj. He served in Vietnam. After the war, he had trouble adjusting to life back home. He used drugs and didn't want to leave his house. A close friend requested that he go to VA, and he started counseling and group therapy. Support from his wife and others has helped him move forward with his life. Doug, please roll tape 3, Connecting with Others to Find a Fulfilling Life.
My name is Samaj. I served in the Army, and I was in Vietnam. I remember it like yesterday. We were walking on this trail. The sergeant was in back of me, and I stopped because the radio strap was cutting into my chest. So I said, well, let me just stop to adjust this. So the line can't stop. Everything keeps moving. So they passed around me. They kept moving. There was a large explosion, and he stepped on an anti-personnel line, which, to date, I was never really a religious person, but at that moment, I knew that there had to be a higher force working, because if I hadn't stopped to adjust the strap, I would have stepped on the mine. I got home, ironically, around, it's crazy, on the 4th of July. which is not the best time to come home because, you know, you got firecrackers and stuff going off. It took me about a month or so. I stayed in the house a lot during that time. A lot of self-medication, you know, vis-a-vis marijuana for the guys my age, which was that was the drug of choice. I had a difficult time. I had a very difficult time adjusting. And then I had to report back because I still had a year of military time to complete. The transition for me from there to coming home and into being back assigned to Brooklyn, the drug thing was still prevalent. The marijuana stuff was still prevalent. That was still there. It's my source of coping. I was 22 when I got married, and my wife was 20. And we were clear after the divorce. We stayed together for 3 years. We weren't really connecting. Wife number two, again, it seemed like all of these relationships weaved in and out of drugs and getting high or what have you. And she got pregnant, we lost a baby, so that was very traumatic. Then we had another child who survived. For me, having a baby was a sobering event. You know, I mean, it was real. It was real. This is not like something making up now. This is real. I had a very close friend of mine who I grew up with. And interestingly enough, he became a veteran's rep. Okay. He said, you need to look about maybe going to school, go back to school, see if you can get some skills. But more so, you need to look at talking to somebody, in the VA. Basically, they said, well, you're definitely dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder. They said, you need to start coming in and meeting with a therapist, psychologist, and start getting some help, some counseling, some coaching, some support. I would get to what they call like a breakthrough, and I would pull away, you know, and stop going. And then something would happen, and I'd go back. I'd started doing groups. I started doing one-on-one counseling. So I'm having a pretty good time, you know what I'm saying? Like, okay, I'm making another turn now. On top of that, I got introduced to this woman, wonderful woman, by the way, who I'm still married to. She was very, very, very instrumental in supporting me, you know, and I got into a couple of groups, and then after going around the block a few times, got reintegrated back into the VA and started going to them on a regular basis. You can't do it by yourself. It's not, you can't live in a cave. And I tried that. I really did. I tried to be alone, be a loner, and let it, and just like the world is out there and I'm in here and I'm cool. And that was the self-medication. That's not going to do it. Because then you end up, you go through your whole life and you look back and you say, damn, like, where did 40 years go? Where did 50 years go? And what do I have to show for my life? Because I think those veterans, those Vietnam veterans, could be very helpful to our present young men and women. They need to find a place, a space, where they can find some release and move forward in their lives.
That was terrific. One of the things that he brought up there, David, that might be a good time to mention this, is that as we approach July 4th, that is Firecracker Day, and that's a big way that we celebrate in this country. Well, I'd like to suggest to people out there that are listening to our show to let them know that firecrackers can be a very, very tumultuous time for veterans, especially as this veteran just pointed out, those suffering with PTSD. So I would suggest that before the neighborhoods start blowing those things off, that they be mindful of any veterans that might be in living in those neighborhoods. I know where I live, some people actually go around and put up little signs that say, please no firecrackers, there's a veteran living here who suffers from PTSD. So that is just something that might be good for people who are listening to the show to think about and maybe pass on to other people who might not be thinking along these lines. What do you think, David?
Yeah, good point, good point. Our next guest, thanks to the VA, is Linda, combat trauma nurse. She served in both the Army and the Air Force. She had symptoms of post-traumatic stress after her service and in war zones. And I think she's a good representative of the many unsung heroes in the medical profession, doctors, nurses, other medical personnel that serve in the armed forces, who have a front row seat to the violence of war, and they're there to save lives. So Linda's going to talk about her experience and also specific therapy that helped her recover. So Doug, if you roll tape 4, which is Combat Trauma Nurse, focuses on her own recovery.
My name is Linda. I served in 2 different military branches. I served in the Army for 6 years and then the Air Force for 15 years. I served as a nurse during wartime, a combat trauma nurse in Balad. I worked night shift, and so every night we would be getting the most severe injuries. I watched people lose their arms or legs, their heads or life. It was almost like I told myself I didn't have a right to start having problems. Whatever you do in the military, when you're in that war zone, you're focused on your mission, you know, whatever that is. And you don't allow yourself to kind of take in what you're seeing. But the sleeping problems turned into nightmares and a little bit of isolation. I actually avoided thinking about it by becoming a workaholic. And on the outside, I looked great. I became field grade nurse of the year. I did a lot of things that I hid a lot of my emotions. Whether you're active duty or you're a veteran, the stigma of seeking help is one of the main reasons most people don't get help. I was, I guess, lucky in the fact that I was placed with an individual that was trained in trauma therapy and would actually meet me right after my night shift. And we met and did something called prolonged exposure, which was really tough, but it worked. For me, prolonged exposure is looking at a few of those traumatic experiences. You kind of go back in time, in a way, and you reprocess that memory. You take it very slowly, and you record it. And my homework at night was to listen to that recording several times a day. It basically was the foundation of me getting better. I was able to remember things more, be more out in public. I was more aware of what triggered me and how to manage those triggers. And it's not just one thing that works. There's a combination, and it's different for each individual. I have a service dog that helped me tremendously. She allowed me to go to school, get my master's degree. She went to school with me every day, got my psychiatric nurse practitioner, and now actually I work at the VA. I've had several patients tell me, you know, I didn't lose my leg, I didn't lose my arm. You know, I feel like it's almost I shouldn't go there. The reality is there's all kinds of care there, both mental health, physical help, but also when they come, even if they don't want to continue at the VA, I give them resources in the community. Sometimes coming and talk to either a transition assistant or coming to mental health, they can give those that information out to the veterans. PTSD is treatable. You don't have to have it the rest of your life. We all in the military a lot of times think we're the only one. We don't know that there's this big wave of veterans that have been exposed to trauma that can get help. They can get better with good therapy, and it's different for each individual. Good therapy, support from the family members, and they find their mission again.
Yeah, that was wonderful advice, and thank you to Linda for not only her service, but for taking the time to share her own personal experience in dealing with the VA, but also helping other veterans. As she said, she works for the VA now, and I think she made some points which are certainly worth repeating, that those that have PTSD, first of all, they can get better. There are perhaps different therapies that work for different people. It's not one size fits all, obviously. And the VA has done a lot in terms of further research, and it's an outstanding resource. So veterans can get better, but they have to make that first step. And some of our guests last week emphasized that point too. It's that first decision, which is so important. Support of family members is important. Every week, Richard, you know, we talk about the Coaching into Care program and how important that is. So those are some excellent points. And she also mentioned something else that I thought was great, and that is they need to find their mission again. You know, those in the military have been disciplined to be dedicated to the mission. And, you know, part of the Air Force is, one of the Air Force's core value is service before self. And that service before self can then continue on in civilian life after they've left the military. And, Richard, you and I know we've had guests over the last year and a half of veterans who have been part of organizations or have actually started organizations who have done just that, that they get veterans involved, give them a new purpose in life, and that purpose usually involves helping people, helping veterans included in that. So some great thoughts. Richard, what do you think before we go to our next guest?
No, I think you kind of nailed it there, David. Finding that mission is very important. Because you have to put something in your life. You have to give your life purpose, and you have to get all the treatment you need and all the counseling you need. But you got to wake up in the morning. You have to have that feeling again of putting, you know, 2 feet on the ground and putting your socks and shoes on and going out and doing something, whether it's volunteer work or whatever the case may be. But finding purpose in your life is I think, part of the treatment. And next we're going to hear from Schuler, who had problems relating to civilians with a challenge after he got out of the Army. He felt on edge, and sometimes he had trouble managing his frustration. He didn't believe he had PTSD, but he knew something wasn't right. Learning he had traumatic brain injury led him to the VA and the Vet Center resources that helped him turn his life around. Back at this time, please roll tape 5, recognizing signs of PTSD and TBI.
My name's Skyler. I was in the Army, active duty, 6 years. I think the overall experience of being in a combat zone stays with you forever. I think my vehicle got blown up directly, maybe 4 times, and indirectly, you know, handful of times. So I think there's like an anxiety that sticks with you about stuff like that. Getting out of the military, it's scary, you know, because you have this whole life that you learned. For me, it was 6 years active duty in an infantry unit. Now I have to all of a sudden go be a civilian. I didn't have any Army buddies around, so I didn't have people that I could talk to and hang out with. And I kind of felt alienated from the civilian world because I didn't share anything in common. When I got out, I didn't think that I had PTSD, you know. I almost thought like PTSD was something that people who couldn't handle the intensity of their job had. And when I got out, I didn't think that I had any issues or mental health issues that would affect me in the civilian life. I found that I was having trouble controlling my emotions sometimes, my anger, my frustrations. It was easier for me to get frustrated. And when I did get frustrated, I took it more seriously, as if something serious was going on. If I was running late to a movie, I felt like I was running late to a mission, and people's lives were at stake. But that wasn't the reality. That personality characteristic, that intensity, that drive makes you succeed in the military, but it doesn't in the civilian world. It alienates you. And I had to back off and let that go. And that was hard. It took a lot of other people coming up to me and telling me, hey, I think you have PTSD. Or, hey, I think that you have things going on that you need to talk about or you need help with. I said, no, I don't think I have PTSD. What could I have PTSD from? And I was always thinking there has to be some specific event. I don't have a constant nightmare where I wake up and I'm reliving a specific situation. I'm not constantly bunkered down in my house behind sandbags, you know, waiting for the invading army to attack. No, I don't have any of those things going on. But there is something kind of wrong, you know? I do have this agitation, this anxiety, this hypervigilance from time to time. Maybe something's not right. So I went down to the VA, and they asked me, they said, have you ever been blown up before? Or have you ever been exposed to a blast? And I said, yeah, quite a few times. And they were like, how many? And I told them, and they were like, wow, well, you probably have traumatic brain injury. They helped with my memory and concentration issues, and how to regulate my mood and stuff like that. And that was a really productive experience because at one point I felt hopeless. I felt like I'm on the road to not recovering. I'm on a downward spiral into some abyss of mental disability. But working with speech pathology and TBI clinic at the VA they had me turned around quick. In a few months, I was in school. I go to the Boulder Vet Center, but there seems to be one located within proximity of every VA hospital. My therapist was an infantry soldier. He was deployed to Vietnam twice. And speaking with him, working with him, it made me feel comfortable to talk about my stories because I knew they were familiar to him. He knew the same emotions that I knew. He had the same feelings I had. Vet centers are great because they have this group dynamics aspect where you meet all these other combat vets. And I think that requirement alone creates a little bit of brotherhood that makes me feel comfortable walking into a group because I say, these guys know what I'm talking about. They know what I know. They've seen what I've seen. If I'm going to open up or feel uncomfortable or be in an awkward situation, it's not going to be awkward because they have those same feelings. And any advice they have for me is going to be beneficial, and I can take it to heart because it's coming from somebody with the same experiences. You're a civilian now. And the best way to, I think, come to peace with all of that stuff, the best way to come to terms with all of your experiences is to talk about it, is to find other vets in the community, is to go to a local vet center, down to the VA, and talk about those experiences. The first thing I would say to anybody is it's not abnormal. All the issues you're dealing with, you're not alone. You are not the only one. You're not weak. And the second thing I would say is go down to the VA. There's no better place to get help for a veteran than a place that is employed by veterans, run by veterans, and is designed to work around veterans. I want to be a behavioral and cognitive therapist that works with combat veterans. So I'd go from Skyler, the high school dropout, to staff sergeant, to Skyler, the rugby player, to doctor. That's a path that I couldn't have even started without the VA. They set you up for the road to success there.
Richard, we have a caller. If she's still there, Rebecca on line 3. I hope she's still with us. Doug,
I'm here.
Are you there? Oh, hi, Rebecca. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, Rebecca.
Hey, Mr. Hurley. Actually, I initially called to piggyback on what your female interviewee said, but this last one covers the other half of it, is before we lost our son to suicide Memorial Day in 2016, he many a times would say, well, you know, I just don't feel like I'm worth anything. I don't know what to do. And then after he passed away, we opted to start Winklesworth Foundation in Crestview, Florida, because we found very quickly there were no peer mentor type groups in Crestview. And my husband is a retired military, and he deployed as well as our son. And we started hearing from these veterans. You know, started out small. Now we're sometimes 20-ish, you know, since a year. And they would tell us, one that literally said, when I got out of the military, I felt like they put me on the back of a plane, opened the door, and pushed me out. He says, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. I have no mission. So we started the peer mentoring groups, and it, to provide them with a place, we feed them. We make a big, long table like family dining, and we just sit and talk about whatever they want to. It's non-structured, and we've had, after about maybe the first 6 months, several veterans come and say, you know what? I needed this. I needed to be able to talk to somebody and not feel like I had to temper my discussions and results, because with my family, I don't want them to bear the guilt and burden that I carry. So they started sharing with each other, and all of a sudden, you know, one who'd been through PTSD still has it, but is now helping, you know, veterans if they get a risk for suicide. And with the sharing with each other, they're like, I finally feel like I have a brother back, that they were starting to build relationships that they would consider, although not active duty, still their brothers. So, you know, him saying that he needed to meet and to talk with people, that's probably one of the biggest things that we found, because no one understands combat better than a vet, than another vet. And he was right. They don't want to share that with their family, their children, their wives. But with another vet, they sit down and they know on some level, maybe not exactly, they come close to being equals. And the peer mentoring to us, we feel, is one of the most important things, in our mind, as important as getting help from the VA and medications and everything, because it's veterans empowering veterans. Veterans who have walked that path that's so dark and so hard, and they're just starting to get to where they can see a light. Another veteran can see that and say, you know what, there is a way to get through this because he's doing it. So both of them, they were spot on. I mean, they just were spot on.
Those are good points, Rebecca. You know, what you're bringing up is almost the basic foundation of recovery. And, you know, utilizing the AA program as an example, 1935, Bill and Bob, who founded AA, said from the get-go, all it takes is two alcoholics to sit down and talk about their experiences, strength, and hope, and that begins recovery. And so what you're talking about with the peer-to-peer counseling, the same thing. Two veterans sitting down, talking about their experiences, strength, and hope, and could be the beginning of recovery.
It does. It gives them, what we've seen, it gives them back a sense of their identity, their purpose, and it assists in taking away some of that guilt that so many of them have expressed. My family would be better off without me. You know, I can't work. My wife's got to take care of me. But when they get in there, my brother-in-law is 100% permanent total with PTSD and TBI. He's very shut down. He's very medicated. But after Drew passed away, we went into a tattoo shop to get memorial tattoos. And the tattoo artist had also been in the 101st Airborne, which is where my brother-in-law retired from. In just the roughly 45 minutes to an hour that it took him to do Sean's tattoo, we saw some of the first glimpses of what he had been, the person he was, and how he was before he had a trigger that sent him. He has no short-term memory, cannot work, has seizures. But for that 45 minutes, all he had to do was be another soldier. And they got it. They knew the same commanders. They, you know, worked at the same base. There was a commonality between the two of them that was seamless there where they didn't have to try at all. And that was very eye-opening because that was well before we started Winkler's Wrist Foundation. It was 2 days before Drew's memorial service. And if nothing else opened my eyes, it was seeing how a man could go from sitting in a living room, hardly able to stay awake, to laughing and joking and smiling and reminiscing. And it was actually, to me, very impactful.
Well, Rebecca, thank you so much, and thank you and your husband for all the work that you are doing now to help other veterans. And as you pointed out, that just that camaraderie and having someone to talk with, and also the sense of being able to contribute, which is all being done through your organization. So thank you again so much.
Hey, Rebecca, if you don't mind, why don't you give us your contact for your foundation if anyone is out there and would like to reach out to
the
group?
Yep, it is the Winkler's Wish Foundation. The easiest way right now is to just go on Facebook, and more than likely before you finish typing Winkler's, it will pop up as the site or the Facebook page, because our site is still under construction to add stuff. But we do the peer mentoring groups the fourth Monday of every month here in Crestview at the Cross Point Church, P.J. Adams, and we post our event every month. I try and get it out about 3 weeks early so that we can. Drew's last post said 1 of 22 per day. Why can't they just help us? Goodbye. So that's the promise we made to him, is that we would help his us. And we're seeing some veterans blossom that were very, very just into themselves and very leery for the first couple of groups, and then they just blossom. So
awesome.
Do that here, and we partner and do stuff with other foundations locally to do activities and just giving the veterans the opportunity to regain the quality of life that they are entitled to.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Rebecca. Appreciate you calling in.
Not a problem.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I wish to remind, this is a national show, so for those of you who aren't familiar where Crestview, Florida is, it's in the Panhandle out there by Pensacola and Panama City. In the final, let's see, David, in the next interview,
yeah, Richard, let's go to, why don't you introduce tape 7. We'll save number 6 for next week.
Okay, in the final interview for this evening, we hear from a Marine veteran named Daniel, whose drinking was out of control after his service in the Marines. He made a change and got help for the sake of his family and friends. Please roll tape 7, Doug. A Marine quits drinking for his daughter.
My name's Daniel. I served in the Marine Corps for 10 years, including 5 tours. I was out at Camp Lejeune for the vast majority of my time. I had a lot of anger issues going into the Marine Corps. You know, I was an addict as a teenager. I was very angry, and then joining the Marine Corps just kind of, you know, ignited all that as well. And then combat service and doing that just kind of accelerated everything. So it was. I still deal with a lot of that today. You know, it's a lot of the PTSD and the anger issues and the anxiety. Every aspect of my life was either at work with Marines, in combat with Marines, or, you know, out at a bar on a motorcycle getting drunk with, you know, Marines and bikers, you know. So it was always pretty hard, and I did a lot of bad things. You know, I hurt a lot of good people. It was very, very hard to come out of that. You know, I thought I was a war fighter, you know. I mean, you know, you fight hard, you play hard, you drink, you sit, you're just, you know, life in the fast lane, so to speak. And that's what I enjoyed. And then when everything kind of came to a head, I was driving down Highway 24 right outside Lejeune, headed to New Bern to see a buddy of mine. And it was him and his family. When I was driving there, I stopped, got a bottle of Jameson, which was my poison of choice, and crushed that, you know, or half of that on the way up there. And when we were there, I was playing around with their son, and I was playing with him really, really rough, you know, because I was wasted. And I was drinking the whole time I was there, and I accidentally hurt him playing with him too rough. And I'll never forget the looks that I got from people that I loved and people that I cared about. And I remember just thinking, this is not my life, you know, this is not who I'm supposed to be. I have a very close relationship with God, and I think that at that time, you know, I got a smack upside the head, like, what the hell are you doing, man, you know? And since that day is when I got sober. Well, there's a program in the Marine Corps called SARPS, that's Substance Abuse Rehabilitation Program, and that is for people who have ARIs, alcohol-related incidences, and also for people who want to receive treatment. And you're in a class with a handful of other guys seeking help, and you have instructors coming in there and, you know, just discussing the different things that, different challenges you're going to meet while trying to be sober. And then on top of that, when you're interacting with other guys who need help and you're starting to help each other and you're seeing that and realizing that makes you want to do more. Once I got out in December of 14, my daughter was born that next month in January 2015. So I left Camp Lejeune. I'm away from everyone I knew, my house, everything like that, and I moved across the country to California because my fiance, she's a senior chief in the Navy, she's stationed here at Pendleton. So I went from being an active duty Marine to being a stay-at-home dad overnight in less than 30 days. Even though I had my daughter, it was still really hard, and I had a lot of slip-ups. You know, it was my fiance was the one who was super supportive, you know, trying to get me help because, I mean, it was I got cabin fever really quick being a stay-at-home dad. So what I did was I checked into the local vet center in Temecula, and all they do is, you know, it's counseling and help with VA benefits, so on and so forth. They do whatever they can. It's all vet run, and, you know, got rubbed elbows with a lot of other vets, you know, and it's always good to be able to, you know, surround yourself with other good people. Fighting that stigma of that you don't need anyone's help is step one. And that was what helped me, was just realizing that help is not a bad thing, you know. Asking for help is probably the strongest thing you can do. Carrying around that emotionally mental baggage, you know, it hardens you, you know, it hardens your heart. And it's hard to be like that when you have other people who have been through the same things you've been through and who have dealt with them in all different kinds of ways. It helps you in immeasurable ways to try to move past all the things that are going wrong. You got to be able to honestly and accurately look at your own life and decide if this is the way you want to be, if this is who you want to be, if you want to be a better father, husband, person in general. You know, I mean, there's plenty of other vets out there that want to help each other, you know, that want to help you when you're having a hard time, man. You know, and like I said before, it takes him a lot of strength to be able to not only admit that, but then to seek it.
Yep, that's great insight. We thank Daniel, a Marine veteran, for sharing that with us. Richard, we're down to our last 2 minutes, so why don't you take us to a condensed version of Coaching Into Care, and then we'll need to wrap up.
Sure. Our Coaching Into Care program, if a veteran is having difficulty transitioning to the home life, returning home can be a tough adjustment and loved ones can help. Coaching Into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call. The number is 1-888-823-7458. It is available Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, the VA's Coaching Into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I'd like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they didn't get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, Veterans Crisis Line can help. 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, David.
Thank you, Richard. It's time for us to go for this evening. We'd like to thank all of you for listening to the Veterans News Hour. We'd also like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. We hope you'll tune in next week, same time, same station, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.